SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. And the first full weekend of September. And this Friday brings us the scheduling shifts. Saratoga to Belmont. And Del Mar to Los Al. Laurel resumes today. Colonial wraps up tomorrow after a terrific and well-received return to the landscape. What else? Where else? Kentucky Downs has the schedule to itself for the week. Yesterday, the action, pretty crazy. It started out, it was funny because it started out yesterday so much a return to normalcy. There hadn't been a single favorite win on the opening card last Saturday. And the favorites were starting to roll in. And then just that quickly, the whole complexion changed. And the second half of the card yesterday turned into a series of big prices. And some were very haveable, as it happens. But that's the beauty of, you know, these big, bulky fields. We said earlier in the week, you get horses that just get lost on the board. Delighted, and not going to get a chance to talk to him today, but absolutely thrilled for Charlie Lopresti. Great to get Charlie a stake win. This came with Ward Pitfield's Get Western, wire to wire in the Old France. Little under 9-1, one of the prices that ended up leaving the pick five bereft of a winner. there was a 4-5 payout, and how about the pick four that paid just under 66,000? Yeah, crazy, just nuts. The nightcap winner under $30, Cambaliza, for Arno Delacour, Runnymede, and Catsby Clay, and that was one of the horses that just clearly got lost on the board. Everybody bet Coileen Bond down to 6-5, and it left a whole bunch of horses at nice prices, and there was no reason that Cambaliza should have been, you know, that close to 14-1. Earlier, Mattress Mac and sister-in-law Laura Wohlers, they combined for a happy run, happy Kentucky Downs result. Take it back, a first-time starter, right up near the lead, well placed by John Court, a pioneer of the Nile filly, and originally bred by Calumet. And takes over and holds the favorite safe in the closing strides at 43-1. That's what started the monster pick four. So big balloons that lit up things after a parade of favorites. Crazy. The opener was a favorite, and then you had a 3-5. You had another 6-5. You had a 3-1. The first four races, the favorite wins, and then in the fifth, you had the second choice win. Granted, he was almost 4-1. But then things even in the sixth, you had what, the third choice, Bohemian Bourbon, Ian Wilkes and Bourbon Lane, and Julian Leperoux. So really another fun day, and everybody's looking forward to tomorrow. Two cards left at Kentucky Downs. We'll cover Kentucky Downs with Marty. He'll join us after the first break. And I'm sure that Scully and Ed will have ideas about the stakes sequence tomorrow. And at tomorrow's card, I know as much as everything has been really has been very good, the card tomorrow, I thought, and even Sunday, looking at the Dueling Grounds Oaks and the Dueling Grounds Derby, but the card tomorrow, I thought, was particularly terrific, and really enjoyed going through the sequence. The stakes start with the juvenile turf sprint, then the regular turf sprint. I don't know why they put turf in. It's all turf. The ladies going a mile, and then the ladies sprint, and the grade three Kentucky Turf Cup, the mile and a half, where Zulu Alpha, I thought, loomed pretty large. There's a couple of other options, but second choice, Zulu Alpha for Mike Maker. Nice sequence. And we'll see what Marty thinks. And later, Hammer, who's having a ball, just absolutely having a great time at Kentucky Downs. We obviously will talk. We got plenty of other things. Colonial to wrap up, and Jill Byrne is going to join us an hour or two. With Los Al opening and the shift back up to the greater L.A. Basin, Los Al today, and there is that good maiden race. Steve Anderson, didn't talk to Steve all summer. Steve Anderson's going to join us to transition from Del Mar back to Los Al and then Santa Anita leading into Breeders' Cup. So we'll talk to Steve Anderson in hour three. Nick Tamaro back in his usual 10 o'clock slot, top of hour two for NTAM 1215. The story that emerged yesterday, and we'll talk to Marty about it, obviously, he and Matt Hegarty covering the press release out of Churchill, who is going to pursue the January through March calendar dates normally held by Turfway. And the long-term interest here that Churchill discussed and Churchill floated is the idea of building a quote-unquote new Latonia. And this is going to meet with positive reaction from the horsemen and other interests in and around not just Northern Kentucky, but Kentucky in general, because there just does not seem to be any movement coming from Turfway. And the extended delays involved with, you know, the Jack organization that now has sold Turfway to Hard Rock. But the delay, and we understand, obviously they had plans to sell and to get out at Turfway. So they weren't interested in following through on the opportunity to install the historic racing equipment. And after promising and promising that that was going to happen, then comes the sale. And you know, now there's really no immediate plan coming even from Hard Rock. So this incursion, I think is probably a good word, back into Northern Kentucky, it makes a lot of sense. And Churchill floating a new racetrack and a historic racing equipment parlor slot parlor, essentially. I can't imagine that there'll be a ton of resistance. And I had a little exchange with Adam Koenig, the Kentucky legislator, who's very active and proactive and so positive about racing. And given what has gone on apparently with the Amazon distribution facility, the potential is that that property where Turfway is may be too valuable to continue as a racetrack anyway. So we'll see. We'll see what this portends, and we'll see what Marty, what he's heard in less than 24 hours. And of course, frankly, in back in Chicago, this has got to just been met with the most cringing and teeth gnashing frustration that that this marketplace, and you can understand some of the mechanics and some of the the dollar and cents elements of this, but it has to be just galling, I would imagine, to the Illinois horsemen that CDI is willing to start from scratch with a brand new racetrack when back in Arlington they're taking at least a pass, as of the last 2 weeks. We'll see. I haven't heard anything new from Springfield as to what the potential is, to reopen those negotiated rates and splits between casino operations and racetrack interests and horsemen's interests. There's plenty of speculation that that's, that could happen. So, with that in the background, here's the latest interesting news. And of course, Churchill preparing that Oak Grove facility as well, the harness, essentially to compete with Kentucky Downs, down in that part of the state. So we'll let Marty opine on this, but it certainly got everybody's attention yesterday. I want to make sure that everybody, and I reached out to Anna Ford last week or 2 weeks ago because I really wanted to get her on here. The New Vocations All Thoroughbred Charity Show, this is the fifth edition, starts today at the horse park. So if you're in and around, anywhere close by, Cincinnati, Louisville, anywhere else, Frankfurt, obviously the Lexington area, take part and go and enjoy and watch what the Thoroughbreds can do in all these other areas of competition. And the various class divisions, jumpers, the Hunter Derby, much, much more. NewVocations.org for details, or at the Horse Park website today, tomorrow, and Sunday. I hope the weather is cooperating. I haven't checked the region, but I congratulate Anna Ford and everybody involved, the beautiful ring, the beautiful facility that they've built at New Vocations, and they do a tremendous job with the retraining efforts. And there's also I heard from Maggie Kimmett yesterday, too. We got to get Maggie back on for the show that, you know, that involves a lot of well-known riders and personalities, what they call the Real Rider Cup, a couple of weeks on the 20th at Fair Hill this year. So we'll get Maggie in to talk about it. But the 5th annual New Vocations All Thoroughbred Charity Horse Show today, tomorrow, Sunday at the Horse Park. All right. Tons of action this weekend. Super Derby. I do have a call out. I reached out for Mary Rampolini. So maybe hour three, we'll get Mary in to talk about Super Derby, Louisiana Downs, and some supporting stakes. It's also tomorrow at Hastings, British Columbia Derby, $250,000, the grade three. It looks pretty good. And they got the British Columbia Oaks, too, for $100,000. No shortage of good racing again this weekend. Arlington, Washington, Lassie, and Futurity as well at Arlington. Let's take a break, and Belmont, which we'll talk about with Nick. Back after this, Marty McGee.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a grade one race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Oh, welcome on, everybody, and let's get together tonight. I got some money in my jeans, and I'm really gonna spend it right. Well, I've been doing my homework all week long. I
We're back at the races. Marty McGee starting us off, as he very frequently does whenever there's topics that Marty is involved in. And before we talk about Kentucky Downs, and of course we got the perfect little, you know, recapping to do from yesterday and Saturday, and then the preview of tomorrow and Sunday. But Marty, breaking news. We should play our breaking news jingle. Did yesterday's new Latonia take everybody by surprise?
You know, Matt Haggerty, my colleague, my on the ball colleague at DRF, called me, I don't know, about 3 o'clock yesterday. He goes, "I'm sure you know about this." I'm like, "No," and he had the whole story written. I mean, he has a person who helps him out, and I said, "Well, send me what you got." And I double checked it with another guy up in one of our sources up in Northern Kentucky who knows everything, and so we kind of beat. Matt had the story out before Churchill put out their release, and the story, of course, is that Churchill intends to take over the 2020 dates from Turfway, that being this coming January, February, March, and then December of 2020. In the hopes that the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission will improve their plans to go on and build a racetrack, wink, wink, with a casino, et cetera, somewhere up in the vicinity of where Turfway is now located. It won't be on the Turfway property, but I understand it's going to be close to there. And it's quite the bombshell. It's a result of Jack Casino having dragged their feet for many years in terms of doing what they were supposed to be doing, that is to, you know, pull their own weight in terms of the Turfway not being the weak link in the Kentucky circuit, which it obviously has become. So huge news broken by Matt Haggerty, and kudos to him. And we'll all see how it's played out. Of course, I've had a number of conversations with guys as to how the dominoes will fall in terms of how it would win a racing if it is indeed legit at Churchill, and then the new, as it's called, New Latonia, up in Northern Kentucky in subsequent years, how that would affect other tracks such as Oaklawn Park, Fairgrounds, and Gulfstream. So a lot of things in play here, Steve.
Well, and there are a lot of things in play, and I speculated on a couple of fronts, including what has to be tremendous consternation in Chicago over this news, that the willingness to start from scratch when they're passing on an opportunity, you know, to support an existing property of theirs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Racing Forum and Churchill are at odds and have been for a few years now, and so I'm kind of reluctant to say anything that would cast them in a poor light, but it's pretty obvious that their company, CDI, is intent on making money in gaming markets, and horse racing appears to be secondary, at least the decision in Chicago further affirms that. So the play here in Northern Kentucky clearly is to go on and establish a foothold in the gaming market there, not necessarily the horse racing market, but that is their way in. And so that's the way they're going to do it. And Matt Haggerty, my colleague who wrote the story, and I urge you, if you're interested in this subject, to go on DRF.com. I think it might be in the Saturday paper. If not, it'll be in the Sunday paper. But he points out that, not coincidentally, this plan also coincides with the governor's election next fall, next November of 2020. And if, in fact, Matt Bevin, who's been reluctant to have expanded gambling, is defeated by the Democrat Andy Beshear, who is in favor of legalizing casinos, then Katie bar the door in terms of what Churchill can do with all their casino properties here in the state of Kentucky. And, of course, that would be, besides the one here in Louisville, the one down in Oak Grove, which is equidistant from Nashville, and Kentucky Downs, it's like the same kind of distance to Nashville. And then, of course, the one in Northern Kentucky, which is a big market, you know, that would obviously be very beneficial to their company.
Well, I just know from, you know, just a couple of quick exchanges with Adam Koenig that he and the legislative elements in and around Northern Kentucky have not heard anything from Turfway and from the Hard Rock people, and they have heard and been active with Churchill. And Adam suggested that, you know, part of the shifting sands here may also be traced to, you know, Amazon's the location, groundbreaking, and what it's going to mean to that whole region up there in Boone County. So I was fascinated by this yesterday. I read Matt's piece, I read the press release, and the horsemen are going to be receptive to this, correct? I mean, because they've been disgusted with the delays in general at Turfway.
Yeah, you would think so. You know, this isn't over yet, though. Hard Rock is not yet finished, according to my source. And the next commission meeting is October 15th. The dates have to be awarded for 2020 on November 1st. So they still have some cards to play. You know, they still hold the license. And if they were to make certain promises or, you know, there's some big money, as I understand it, behind them as to whether or not they want to hold on to this. If they wanted to, you could think they could give Churchill a pretty good fight. But we'll see what happens on that front.
Amazing. When was the last time Churchill ran races through the winter months?
I'm going to say never. You know, they usually close down right around New Year's Eve and don't open up till early March, and that's when they do their quote unquote house cleaning of the backside and repairs and updates and all that. So I guess, you know, this is a short term thing. Obviously, if they're going to run for the next winter or two, that would be it, because that would be with the understanding they'd go ahead and build a new track near where Turfway is now.
We will follow this remarkable turn of events. It never ceases to amaze or disappoint. There's always something that keeps you on your toes.
Churchill's strong. I'll say that. Yeah. They are strong.
Yeah, they're jumping in at where the opportunities arise, and it's hard. Certainly, anybody that has the stock won't argue with the way in which the management has been able to improve shareholder value, as the right, as the saying goes. Let's turn our attention to Kentucky Downs and yesterday's action and the weekend upcoming. And I suppose one story that we didn't that happened after Marty that we talked last week, they're going to try to get a couple of extra days of racing for next year. They're going to apply for 7 days.
Yeah, I don't know what those exact days are. I'm sure it has to do with how the calendar falls. You know, we've got a leap year coming, so what would that make? Yeah, you know, August, would they go for August? I guess it would be 29th, would be the first Saturday next year. And I don't know if Ellis wants, with their new ownership, I mean, there's so many balls in the air, Vic. You know, I don't know if they're going to want to concede that one Saturday to Kentucky Downs now that they got new guys in there. And but, yeah, everybody's clamoring for a little bit more of Kentucky Downs. You don't want to – you got to be careful not make too much of a good thing, but you would think that 7's pretty reasonable.
I agree. And one year they tried for 8 and got rebuffed, and they'll negotiate, I suppose, with Keeneland and Churchill and the KHRC representatives. Meanwhile, the racing itself, let's look at back to Saturday before we talk about yesterday. Some thoughts about the Tourist Mile and the baby races. I really haven't – I talked to Cassie about his winners between Hanalei Moon and also the baby Peace Achieved. But what was your opening day impressions?
Well, Snapper Sinclair, he came from like ninth at the 16th pole or something. It was one of those things. It was like a harness race. You know, it's like all of a sudden here's this horse. He just passed everybody within a relatively short span. So I know Steve was over the moon with that. And then we also had Coxwin with probably the most visually impressive horse, the Jezebel's Kitten, won the juvenile fillies. And although Herbier came back pretty low, I think it was a 73, you know, there's a lot of upside there with a horse like that. So I thought it was a great day of racing. They handled more than 8 million, which was by far their best for an opening day, which means that tomorrow the all-time record of 10 million is likely to fall. They've got the richest card in track history tomorrow. So, but looking back on that opening day last Saturday, the favorites were 0 for 10. And then, of course, yesterday, the first four races went to favorites. That's the way it goes. And then favorites lost the last six yesterday. So, yeah, and I really was kind of tickled for, you know, as much as we've all heard about Run Happy, this is the Run Happy meet at Kentucky Downs, and everything is Run Happy. But Run Happy's owner, Jim McInvale, won a race with an $88 horse yesterday, a first-time starting filly by Pioneer of the Nile. So I thought that was kind of poetic justice, and I ended up writing a little something about that today for this morning for the Sunday paper.
Very nice, and I saw your tweet on it. Got to mention one of the winners from yesterday, and you know, the reason that you have to dig into these fields and do, you know, particularly with the two-year-olds, do your pedigree work. Yesterday in the third, Art Collector, who we saw at Saratoga, and you know, the first Saturday card, the Saratoga runners were not faring well, but here came a runner from Joe Sharp and Bruce Lunsford. In fact, a horse that Lunsford bred, a Bernardini colt out of Distorted Legacy, and ran well in the debut to be second, comes back and wins here at 6-5. But I thought it was notable. Jolting Joe was second in here for Maker, and I don't know how a horse that's a half to Some Like It Hot Brown, why this horse goes off at 13-1, because he was my play, and I wasn't unhappy with the way thing. I mean, it would have been nice to win, but you know, was able to get a little something out of the exacta, but I mean, how do you not, you know, how does a horse like this go ignored?
Well, I don't know, Vic. I mean, there's a lot of these races have a lot of alluring options in them. You know, you got 12 horse fields, and 13-1 isn't that huge of a price. So, yeah, I don't know what to say to that.
No, it's just an example. I mean, and it's funny, Mike Maker, you know, who has been so good at this meet the last several years, Maker, he's not struggling. The horses are running well, but you know, the wins are going to have to come in the last 3 days.
Well, he's got a horse in every race on Sunday. I don't know what it is tomorrow.
Wow.
But all 10 races on Sunday, he's got a horse. Let me look at what he's got in tomorrow.
Holy cow!
Yeah, come on, computer.
That's nuts.
Yeah, I think he's been blank on the first 2 days, though, which is highly uncharacteristic of him. Let's see, Maker tomorrow. Yeah, he's only got 1, 2, 3, 4. He's only got horses in 7 of the 10 races tomorrow.
Well, you got to figure, and what, he had 5 seconds coming into yesterday, so now he's got at least 6 and maybe more. So it's not that the horses aren't running well. They're just not getting their noses out in front when it counts. Let's talk about tomorrow and a little bit about Sunday, the Dueling Grounds Derby and Oaks, but dive into tomorrow, and let's start and work our way back from the Grade 3.
Well, you've got a pick five, an all-stakes pick five. We've got 5 stakes, like I mentioned. It's the richest day in history at Kentucky Downs. I counted it up. It's almost, I think it's like $3.8 million if they pay out all the KTDF. I thought Arclo was the horse to beat. They've got him 5-2. By the way, my ex-colleague, Byron King, is making the line there. He's done a real good job so far. Arclo, he's made him 5-2. I think he'll be a little bit shorter. He's got those real big buyers to show up. I know that Brad's been pointing to this race for a while, and the timing from the Bowling Green to this race is pretty ideal. So, and Giroux, as we all know, he won He won three races on opening day. Should have won a fourth, and they took his number down. I'm waiting on Dougie Bradar to see if he's getting days from that or not. But anyway, I just thought Arklow was a horse to beat, and Maker's got three horses in there with Noble Thought, Zulu Alpha, and the old vet, Bigger Picture. I thought that Zulu Alpha is the most dangerous of that trio.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I slight preference actually as the win candidate, just slightly preferred to Arklow, but you know, both highly highly eligible, and there's obviously plenty of other nibblers. Pilar Mountain caught my attention a little bit, and I'm going to feather Pilar Mountain in. Seems to be improving every, with every start, and 10-1 for Pilar Mountain. And
I like that feather. I usually use sprinkle, but yeah, I'll go with the feather. That's good.
You're the best. Working backwards, the ladies sprint, and this is also graded now these days, and nice group in here, led by the emergent Team Valor mare. The homebred Team Valor mare, Alexandra.
That's my pick. I've got her. It was really a tough. This is, like so many of these races with, mares like Ruby Notion and Morticia and some other ones, Painting Corners for Peter Miller. And, I went with Alexandra just kind of figuring that the 6.5 might take its toll on some of those horses who are used to going a little bit shorter. So, I just thought that her late run might nab him on the wire for Neil Drysdale.
Well, and I don't disagree, but I am going to use the Baltus Invader. A Little Bit Me, I thought, the factor mare.
I hope you bet on her Thurby because she paid $50. You don't want to miss the wedding and go to the funeral pick.
Well, there's been the wedding, funeral. That race was three races ago. She's had a divorce and she's had an annulment since.
But that money goes a long way when they pay $50.
I thought she was okay in here, and coming back to Kentucky after returning home after that $50 win. Let's talk about the mile event, and this is the ladies turf, the grade three as well, of course, and a nice interesting group in here, and this one feels like the obvious candidate. Mitchell,
I'm speaking of Baltus, I'm going with the outside horse, the horse of the open air outside box where the air is fresh and clear, with Ms. Bad Behavior. He regrouped her after that debacle in the Royal Heroine, and it looks like she's working well, and she's going to get a trip with Jose, so I'm going to take her at a little bit of a price. Ms. Bad Behavior, the outside horse.
There's a few options in here. That Sensitive is okay, 8-1. How about Viva Vegas? How old is she? No, just 5. It feels like she's been around forever. D'Amato with Storm the Hill. What do we got on Storm the Hill? Ooh, 3-1.
Yeah, 3-1. Yeah, she ran a big one to barely get beat by the Cox Trains Bo Recall just 4 weeks ago in the Yellow Ribbon, so 5 weeks ago. And, she's a contender here. I mean, there's quite a few players. They've got Mitchell Road, the favorite, 5-2. I thought she got a great trip in the Gallarette, just was a bit overmatched by the Chads in the Diana, but she is the favorite for Maud. I'd try and take a play against her.
Talk about the turf sprint, the 6 furlong for the boys, and Mike Trombetta sends his grade one winning Wet Your Whistle, and the wonderful Imprimus shows up for Joe Orsino, undrafted. I mean, you got really a Stormy Liberal. You got about as many of the high-profile turf sprinters as you could want lining up in here.
Yeah, this is the first ever winning you're in at Kentucky Downs. They're very proud of it. They should be, so whoever wins here gets the expenses paid to the Breeders' Cup in California. I'm going with Orsino in here with Imprimus. His race in the Shakertown was just phenomenal, where he overcame that terrible start when he went to his nose. Joe says that he did come out of the race at Royal Ascot tired and lost some weight, but he says he's got him back on the beam now, and he really likes him. So I think that the extra furlong probably will help him. He's got tons of gas, as we all know. So I'm going to go with him over the Rusty pair of Leinster, who's what a story he is. He lost 13 in a row. Now he's won 3 in a row. And then Leinster's half-brother, the reigning turf champion, that being Stormy Liberal in from California for Peter Miller. Heck of a race. Rusty's also got Totally Boss on the outside. He's a nose away from being undefeated in his last 4 starts. He's really been a trooper here on the Kentucky circuit. So a heck of a race, and fittingly so for their first WAYI.
And you mentioned the half brothers, which is just such a fun element to have them lining up next to each other. Leinster by Majestic Warrior and Stormy Liberal by Hillendale's Stormy Atlantic. White Flag, nothing wrong with White Flag in here. Certainly got some respect there. And, you know, Totally Boss, you mentioned the other Rusty Arnold. Totally Boss is going to be, I think, probably overlooked in here. And that preview try at Ellis, he runs back to that race. He's a part of this.
Absolutely.
It's a good group. That's one of the really fun races of the weekend. The pick five starts, though, with the two-year-olds, and this could get squirrely potentially.
Yeah, it's a tough race. I went with Maker in there with Chimney Rock for 3 diamonds. You know, he did win one of those restricted maiden races, but he did it the right way, turning back from a route, going short. He got a real nice buyer for the level with Jose. It's way wide open, though, Steve. You got 12 babies in there, and, you know, half dozen of them or so could win. So I wouldn't blame you for spreading out a little bit here to start it off.
Now, that Prince of Thieves for Cassie certainly deserves some attention. He also brought Mrs. Weber's first out winner, Stormy Dormy, an Into Mischief. This is kind of tricky. I will mention Vicky Oliver, how ironic, with Rafi Bejarano. And what's interesting to me here is, I'll have to dig up Tonalist's first-time starters, Marty, because for a Tonalist to win first out going 5 furlongs, that's notable to me. And right,
her buyer's only a 40, though, so
I don't care. She came from downtown, and Vicky Oliver, we know Vicky Oliver is very clever and dangerous. So just an FYI, everybody, don't say you weren't warned.
Yeah, you can expect to see that horse run at Keeneland no matter what.
Exactly, with those connections. Well, Mart, another terrific Saturday card. It's third day of the meet. Fourth day comes on Sunday. And how about a quick look ahead to the Dueling Grounds Derby and Oaks?
Well, let's see here. Let me get out my overnight here, Big. You know, they've also got 3 of the Kentucky Claiming Crown prep races that they started 2 or 3 years ago on this card. So it's another great card, as you might expect. All these cards are 10 race cards. The 8th and the 9th on Sunday are the 2 Dueling Grounds races. What do I got here? I got the wrong overnight here, Big. I'm sorry.
That's all right. To throw some names for people.
Yeah.
Well, you got what's interesting is you've got some of the horses that scratched out of other opportunities to run here, including Social Paranoia comes in for Pletcher as your 2-1 favorite. But Rise the Guy, who bypassed the race at Indiana on Wednesday and lands in here. Channel Island for Maker, Limonite. It is Super Derby weekend, and didn't he win? Was it Limonite that?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, he won on Derby Day. I know that. I'm going with Social Paranoia in there for Todd. I just thought he's against a lot better horses. In the filly race, the Dueling Grounds Oaks, I'm going with your one of your favorites, Vicky Oliver, with a filly named High Regard. But a couple of really good races.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mentioned the Indiana race. How brutal was that to see Jimmy Baker get taken down?
I'm trying to think of what you're, you know, I've got a lot of balls in the air here myself, so I don't.
All right. On Wednesday, late Wednesday, you had the Caesars and the Indiana Grand.
And, I didn't know that. Damn
yeah.
it. Who was it? What horse was it?
Oh my gosh, now I'm going to draw a blank on the name. $200,000 spot at 35-1.
Oh no.
Yeah. It was ugly. Spectacular Gem. Spectacular Gem. Declan Cannon was going a little too heavy with the left hand. Jimmy's one of the really good guys. Marty, this was great and fascinating news and tremendous racing on tap again at Kentucky Downs tomorrow and Sunday.
Churchill Downs starts next Friday. We'll talk to you then.
Marty McGee, everybody, and of course everybody looking forward to Dennis's moment and his stake try. How about Haskett yesterday? He brings up Dennis's moment like nobody's ever heard of him. like he's informing you for the first time about Dennis's moment. I got a kick out of that. There's a horse, you know, but Dale Robinson. No kidding. Let's take a break. Coming back after this with Scully. Do some handicapping with James.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at expressbet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Back at the races, 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Nick Camaro will join us in a little bit. We'll talk about the Belmont action. Belmont starts today. A little bit of a weather watch on. It's like a 50% chance, I guess. I saw the group text from the racing office that they're holding the MTOs just in case the weather kind of disintegrates. But tomorrow is supposed to be okay in New York for the two big, rich third legs of the turf troikas that were created. We'll talk to Nick about them. And, of course, the former Temperance Hill gets a remake into the Grand Prix American Jockey Club Invitational. Those are the six names. The James Scully is standing by, and we talked to James going into the first day at Kentucky Downs last week, and a couple of good notions. And in fact, if you combined James's idea last week in the One Dreamer to start the pick four and to bet individually, if you combined James's idea with mine, you had the exact, and it was pretty good. Nepali Moon and Nepali Spirit. And James, I'll thank you for that, because I used Nepali because you were interested in her. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, 21-80 to place on Nepali Spirit. Yeah. So, I mean, she ran a good race, but the winner was too good in that spot. And it's got a big weekend ahead there at Kentucky Downs with Saturday's stakes pack card, and then Sunday got a pair of 3-year-old stakes. And racing's been good there. It's been a little. I think the track is really pledged fair at all running styles. It has been a little bit formful. With a lot of winners paying like $10 or less. Like yesterday was a good example. We saw more than half the card, but definitely some good racing and just great depth to the field. So it's a good betting product for sure. And looking forward to tomorrow there.
Well, and I mentioned with Marty, for instance, on opening day, you had the the Hot Brown, some like a Hot Brown sibling, Jolt and Joe, get away at 14-1. And I mean, that's the kind of horse that I think you seek out at Kentucky Downs. You look at that maiden, the maiden nightcap yesterday. Cambaliza's last race, which came at Monmouth, was as good as anything anybody had run in here, and yet she goes off at 14-1.
Yeah, I mean, and you're going to see that. You're going to see horses that are in good form. That Nepali Spirit was a good example. She was 8-1 on the morning line. Maybe that price might have been a little bit low, but she's sitting up there at like almost 30-1. So. There's definitely an opportunity for a horse like Cambaliza yesterday and others to slip through the cracks potentially. You know, that finale, the that horse that Rosario was on in second just got bet off the board, the Command horse. So that opened up an opportunity if you liked Campbellisa.
Well, we look forward to the weekend and not confined just to Kentucky Downs. I'm assuming you combed the PPs for opportunities. Where do you want to start?
Well, I'll start at Kentucky Downs, and I've got a price play earlier on the card, but I'll start in the stakes races. And I've just been with the Juvenile Turf Sprint. That's a race I'm looking forward to betting tomorrow, I'll say. I certainly hope that Chimney Rock stays in there. It is a six-day turnaround for that colt, but, you know, we've seen Maker do that many, many times. So optimistically he'll be in there because I like number 10, Al Cools. This gemologist, gelding, I mean, obviously had something wrong with it at the sale, sold for only $4,000, a savvy buy by Wayne Rice, who owned and trained him. Made his debut August 3rd at Woodbine, and just visually, I mean, I was just impressed. You know, she put himself in the race from the start. It was much bigger than all the other horses in there. Really had, like, a turf action, and just won... you know, one comfortably, but you get to see where he could really improve off that effort. And Gary Barber, Wattel Stable, et cetera, I mean, they bought him immediately because they transferred him, and he got two works in it at Churchill, you know, running back a month later. You know, this gelding is a half to Hog Creek Hustle, who won the grade one Woody Stevens, half to Majestic Dunhill, who was a turf stakes winner, real versatile type. And, you know, I think if I can get a price anywhere near 6-1, I look forward to that without Cools in the turf sprint, Juvenile Turf Sprint.
Going on with as the 10 tomorrow, Al Cools. Very nice. I like it.
In the turf sprint, you know, definitely, you know, I mean, Stormy Liberal, I thought that was a salty race. I thought Mr. Vargas and Eddie Haskell were both in good form, and they were in good form. And both those horses are going to be Breeders' Cup turf sprint types. So I could excuse that. Won't be surprised to see him win. But the horse I'm giving the edge to is number 10, Totally Boss. He's the kind of horse that I like that's, like, really gotten good of late. The other Rusty Arnold in the field. I thought that race two starts back, I loved that effort on the closing day at Churchill. He had to stop and wait in traffic and was arguably best that day against Oma. And then last time, you know, I thought he dropped too far back. It was just sort of a little bit surprising. I'm sure his supporters didn't expect him to be so far back, but that was really an eye-catching move on the far turn. Just absolutely, this four-year-old gelding seems to be peaking right now for Rusty Arnold, and I just think there's an opportunity for some value with number 10, Totally Boss.
And I brought him up with Marty a little bit ago, the other Rusty Arnold beside Leinster, and they both have come to hand this summer.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, the ladies' turf, I just thought there was a potential in there. I took a hard look at Miss Bad Behavior, but at least I do think that she and Mitchell Road are going to sort of keep each other company. And I just think the 8 Sensitive can get a good trip for Brett Cox and Sean Bruce Mahan. It's just another filly, a mare that has just really come on of late, has gotten, pretty good, it looks like, after racing sparingly in 2018, only had 2 starts last year. This will be her 5th start of the year. She's gotten fit in those races, and she's run pretty solid, eligible to take another step forward tomorrow for a hot trainer, Brett Cox.
Yeah, Sensitive, absolutely. You get Bridgemo. Let me mark on these.
My opinion in the ladies' sprint, race 9, is I'm Alexandra, that race last time I really just thought fell apart, and she ran some good races at Beaumont and Woodbine, but to me she's a threat to leave herself too much to do in this spot, and I'm a little worried about Morticia. Just not being at her absolute best as well. And both those horses are, they're among the favorites. So I look at it this race where, especially if I'm playing multi-tickets, I'm going to use some horses that are going to be a better price I look at number, well, first off, I'll just start with the defending champ, Ruby Notion. She came back, and I just think she needed a couple starts, you know, back this year in the spring. Didn't really fire in that role north, but I liked that effort in the Smart and Fancy last time where she put herself in a good position and lost all this ground going wide. I see that as a positive setup race, and she likes Kentucky Downs. The other two I looked in there were a little bit me, the Baltus Philly. Definitely, is going to be in the mix, I would think, like turning for home. And Coexistence, I think, is not impossible in there. The 5-horse, 15-1 for Sharp and Biskitza. She's going to be on the front end, and she might get a good trip up there. So definitely one, if she doesn't win, to consider for Vertical Exotics Coexistence.
Yeah, I pointed out a little bit me with Marty, and Ruby Notion was my pick that day at Saratoga in the Smart and Fancy. And she started that rally and was motoring pretty good and just kind of flattened out a little bit and may have just been a little bit short, but she came into Saratoga very much like she had the previous year and ran huge. And so she'll be that much tighter in this spot. And like you say, of course, that she's had success over as well. Fun group, no doubt, in that ladies' sprint. We went this far. What about the Turf Cup?
Yeah, really good race. You know, I think the two, I think Arklo, I mean, he's going to be tough to beat. He likes that course. He's coming off a good effort. And, you know, Zulu Alpha is going to offer a little bit of, it's going to offer a better price. But I do like how he's coming in this race for Maker, because it just looked like he tailed off some, I thought, Steve, after those back-to-back graded stakes win at Gulfstream. But ran a good race, I thought, in that Bowling Green. And I think he's set up to put it all together in this Turf Cup. A horse I will mention, and I'm not like real keen on his win chances, but he's the kind of horse that I won't mind using on multi race tickets. Is number six Factor This, and I just think he's gotten good right now. Like I said, Brett Cox. And if this Hello Don Julio, who looks like he's in a little bit of a mess right now, you know, coming off that last race, doesn't go with him, he could get a dream trip up front and might not be good enough to win. But if you're betting, like Vertical Exotics, he might be one to consider going in good form right now.
Well, and I'll reiterate my price idea that has to come from off the pace, but Pilar Mountain for Pletcher, I thought was. Going to get lost out there at 10-1 on the morning line. It is a really, really fun sequence tomorrow at Kentucky Downs. And where else?
Oh, I got a price horse on the undercard, race number 4, 6.5 furlong allowance. Number 5, Get Some Mo, 15-1 with James Graham. Really, I thought that was a great educational race, really a traffic-filled trip, finished with interest. Gets a couple nice horses in Giraffe and New Colossal. So that horse looks live to me on the front end. Uncle Mo Gilding gets the Mo in race 4.
Anywhere else tomorrow?
Well, I mean, you know, to me, it's just like I looked at the turf races and then the Philly race. You know, I'm going to wait and get a little bit more insight from Kelly Riley, our international expert, about that. But, you know, Digital Age to me improved last time. I liked how he sat closer to the pace. He's just been such a one-run confirmed closer. Looks like if he could sit a good trip, he might get first run on Spanish Mission and a couple of those other ones in the Jockey Club. And I'll just say this. I'll add one other thing. I'm sure you guys talked about it earlier in the week, but I was really impressed last Saturday, Steve, by Preservationist. There was a horse, you know, 6 years old, lightly raced, but all of his wins had come at a one-turn distance at Aqueduct, and then he won an allowance in the Suburban at Belmont, but they weren't a true two-turn races. So off of that Whitney, I really thought the jury was out whether he was a legitimate, like, classic type contender.
And I love that race there. I liked how he finished. I like how he overcame some adversity. He looks to be coming, this year's classic is so wild because McKenzie is like the best older horse out there. I don't think there's any doubt he could look awesome in this awesome again coming up, his final prep for the classic. But, he's winless at a mile and a quarter, and, he's got a little bit of, you got to, like, think back to a horse like Game On Dude. I mean, that horse has just got to prove it, in a sense, to me, at a mile and a quarter, and he might be able to do it, but a preservationist looks a lot better for the Breeders' Cup Classic in my eyes off that Woodward win.
Well, they may, after having talked to Don Little Jr. and also to Jimmy on TV Sunday, they may take some convincing. They'll make a decision after the Jockey Club Gold Cup. I mean, it's so funny because we all just, we all think it's a slam dunk, and particularly with a horse that, is now 6 years old and has had health issues, and they finally got him right. You would think it's irresistible to go, but they're a little different. But I would imagine that if everything, if they come through the Jockey Club Gold Cup well and he's right, I imagine that they have to go. But we'll see how that one plays out. Anything for Friday? The last second Friday push?
Well, I looked at Belmont Park, but I just worried about that weather and such. So yeah, no last second Friday plays, unfortunately.
No problem. James Scully, everybody. James_Scully 111 on Twitter, and brought to you by Twin Spires, where players win. James, good luck this weekend. We'll talk next week.
Thanks so much, Steve. Bye.
James Scully. Let's take a break. Top of the hour, a little bit past. We're not in bad shape here. Just 6 minutes. We're 6 minutes late. Trying to keep this train on time. Nick Tamaro going to join us next. Coming up to Jill Byrne, Ed DeRosa, Hammer, Steve Anderson, and I think Mary Rampolini. Although I surprisingly have not heard back from Mary. She's usually very good about the morning after I reach out to her in the evening, and I usually hear from her in the morning. So I think we'll talk to Mary about Super Derby, Louisiana Dance as well. Back after this, Hour 2, Nick Tamaro.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
In the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Are you ready, Boots? Start walking!
Conversation with Kentucky Downs, but we'll turn our attention to Belmont Park, where racing returns today. We come back from Saratoga, and a always important September, October at big, beautiful Belmont. We'll see if it's going to be the full Belmont meet. They're going to take a wait-and-see approach about moving over to Aqueduct. They want to see what the construction work for the Islanders Arena and how much it interferes with the racing. And they're starting at 3 o'clock on weekdays and then 1 o'clock on the weekends. Nick Tamaro standing by. Nick, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Steve?
Okay. All right. Getting ready here to make that seasonal shift, you know, breaking out the sweaters and the turtlenecks and the tweed.
Yeah, not so much in Houston. It's going to be 103 today. Yeah, we're going to break the record 3 days in a row for high temperatures.
Is that right?
This is it's funny. 20 years ago, we set the record for September 5th and 6th, 1999, and I remember it was I think it was Memorial Day weekend in Saratoga, and there was a big pick-six carryover. I guess that's how I remember things on the calendar. But so it happens. You know, it's a little hotter than it needs to be. I think the high temperature at Louisiana Downs tomorrow is 102, which is going to be a little rough. There's not quite the participation from out of town that there was in the past, but that's going to be toasty. Yeah, 102, that's a little rough. But we'll get through it. It'll be cool here. Probably a couple months away.
Are you doing your Louisiana Downs run?
I am not. I'm passing on it this year. Haven't been in a couple of years now, and we'll eventually get up there again. But yeah, once Travis moved on, I went a couple times, and not going to make the trip this time around. But they got a nice card. They drew the card a week ago or so, and the Super Derby is. You know, we were talking about it on Twitter a little bit the other day. The Super Derby is a race really rich with history. And you go back through YouTube and watch some of the old Super Derbies and take a look at some of the horses that won. If you ever make it to Louisiana Downs, there's a wall with all the silks of previous winners on the just to the left of the foyer. And, I mean, it's a who's who of big racing groups.
Sure.
From time. I mean, Phipps are up there, Arthur Hancock, Dogwood. It's Ali Sheba's silks, of course. It's a really special list, and it was a great idea when it started. Eddie DeBartolo, I think 1980 was the first one. Temperance Hill, I believe, won the first Super Derby, and it's certainly not the race that it was, and that's a shame. But I think they made the right decision moving it back to the dirt, and I think the date on the calendar will always present some obstacles, but they'll do everything they can. They did put together a competitive card, and there's some nice big fields on the turf, and those horses should be largely unaffected by the weather. There will be some who are, but the majority are locals, and the ship-ins will just have to slog their way through.
You know, and I expect that we're going to hear from Mary Rampolini before the day is out. This race for Frankie Brothers, this is the first year of this, either inaugurated or renamed something.
Yeah, it's a renamed version of the Unbridled.
Okay.
It is that race, and Eric Hallstrom, who was at Fairgrounds, was at Canterbury, is now at Louisiana Downs, and I've never met him, but I've heard nothing but good things, and it seems like he's trying to get Louisiana Downs a little bit back to the history of the place. And so they inaugurated a Hall of Fame back in July, I believe, and they inducted a handful of people into that Hall of Fame, and that was basically meant to draw attention to the rich and storied history of the track. I mean, and for a place that's only been open for 40, you know, little over 40 years, it does have a very strong history. And that's a lot more of a racing interested community, I think, than people would realize. Of course, the Shreveport-Bossier metro area is not particularly large, but you do get a good number of people coming over from Texas to play in the casino and to come to the racetrack, the ones that now aren't making the trip up to Oklahoma. But it's I think, something that he wanted to do to pay attention to a lot of the good things that had happened over time. And little did a lot of people realize that Frankie Brothers has this you know, unbelievable record of winning at Louisiana Downs. I think he won 9 straight training titles or something like that. So they named this race in his honor, and certainly deserving. And somebody who has been very popular in Louisiana racing for a long period of time. And I mean, if you get a chance to talk to Mary, she'll have much more information, much better information too, and probably some better handicapping thoughts on the card.
Well, how about Kurilov showing up in this race?
Yeah, it's I guess Brad. It's kind of funny. I suppose Brad Cox gets the Salk Human B teamers to some extent. Not that this one is a. Well, he is kind of a B-teamer. But this is a horse who I think there were a lot of expectations for. I would have bet anything he'd find a way to win a Grade 1 on the turf after he missed by a neck to heart to heart. And it just turns out he's not really much horse. I do think that if he's about 60% of what he was last year, he'll get his stay with Brad Cox started with a win, given that he's drawn favorably on the inside and certainly has run some turf races that would just really kind of tear this field apart. But, yeah, it's funny. This is a race that actually has a few Chad Brown cast-offs that some may not even realize that Theory Into Practice also is. And Theory Into Practice going all the way back to his 2-year-old season. And you also have Brad Cox's Big Changes on the far outside, who I believe is the second choice on the morning line. Looks like really the only rival for Kurilov. And Cox now is certainly adopted the ways of somebody like Mike Maker, who realized that a lot of these regional stakes races, you can pop a mid-range horse in your barn into, and they can go off 6-5, and that money spends.
Yeah, exactly. Since we're here, Super Derby.
You know, I guess it's really Nick Scho's race to lose. He's gotten to a point, I think, where Ben Colebrook has him back in form. I guess the book on Nick Scho is that he was a precocious 2-year-old who didn't really advance later on in the season. I guess to some extent he left his race on the track the night of the juvenile. He ran great in there, and I think the smart money would have been that he'd be a major player in the 3-year-old races this year. And I don't know if he went to the well a little too quickly in bringing him back in the Kentucky Jockey Club, but nonetheless, I think he's back in best form and looks to be the controlling speed in here. So that would obviously make him very, very tough. I think if for some reason he maybe can't get the lead or doesn't take another step forward, I suppose the next likeliest win candidate is Leader of Men, who won the Prelude. And the Prelude Super Derby double has been pulled off by a number of horses over time. I believe the last one to do it was Apart, who was a stablemate of Blame. And I think, interestingly, Rescind, who's in here for Al Stahl, is a sibling of Apart. And he's actually by Blame, so it sort of works out being a little cyclical there. But, yeah, it looks like Nick Scho's race to lose. Steve Asmussen's always well represented in these. Rotation didn't have a clean trip last time and probably can improve. He won this race last year with Limation, and I would imagine he'll be a pretty major player from the inside. I think with a cleaner break, Richard Aramia can keep him somewhat close, and that'll certainly help his cause. But, you know, look, Nick Scho's best races win this thing pretty handily. So if he shows up, gets the lead, I think he'll be pretty tough.
That horse that Pirate's Punch ran last time for Grant Forster was kind of impressive.
Big step forward, yeah. And this is a horse that I guess got into form for Jeff Mullins late. He was part of that exodus from California that Mullins had, and him and a few other trainers. And now that he's with Grant Forster, yeah, I mean, that was his best race by far. He actually would seem to be the biggest threat to Nick Scho, given that he also has some speed. I think it what it boils down to is whether you believe that Nick Schoen might just be good enough to sit off of him and still be effective. But yeah, that was definitely a big forward move. Seems to be training well, and Robbie Alvarado is another one with a good history in this race. Certainly knows his way around the track. I mean, there's an argument to be made that this pace could get very quick if Pirates Punch and even Cabot to an extent should show some speed being drawn on the inside, stretching out. I would have to think that Ron Moquette wants him somewhat forwardly placed, and that would certainly really benefit a horse like Leader of Men, who was victorious in the prelude from off the pace, and might even help at a long shot price underneath. You could probably throw Paint Battle in there to maybe get a slice at 35 or 40 to 1.
The Super Derby goes off at 6:07 Eastern time. Louisiana Downs with a really nice card. If we don't talk to Mary, I'm glad we had a chance to do this. And it also, of course, has it features the two-year-old filly race that honors one of my favorite of all time, Happy Ticket. I was nuts for Happy Ticket. Poor thing. Let's turn our attention to Belmont, Nick. And before we talk about the races on the New York side of things, some Saratoga recap thoughts, whether it's the Woodward or everything else that went on since last Friday, since we talked.
You know, you're sad to see Saratoga go no matter what. From a wagering perspective, in most cases, you're usually relieved because it is a lot more work. It's a lot more difficult. There's a lot more that goes into it. And the racing itself is so tricky on a day-to-day basis. And I think staying afloat is a lot harder than it is there anywhere else if you're going to be playing just about every day. So it was a very good meet by all accounts. I think looking at it from a fan's perspective, it's pretty tough to argue with everything that happened. I thought there were some really, really excellent performances from some of the best horses that we figured would go postward. And on top of that, the business was incredible. The going to 5 days looked like it paid off very handsomely. The handle was through the roof. And it just goes to show you that racing in general across the country on a day-to-day basis is so starved for any kind of competitive offering. And I don't say that to sort of besmirch everybody that's trying to put a product out there. It's just a number of factors at play. Now, Saratoga 5 days a week could put out a pretty competitive product, and even on days where people may have been complaining about the quality of the card, it was still better than, unfortunately, it was better than what we've gotten accustomed to, and people bet on it. And it goes to show you that there's still a lot of hunger for even a marginally competitive product out there. And you know, for everybody that wants to dance on the grave of thoroughbred racing, it's just not the case. And there's a lot of interest. There are a lot of people that want to bet real money and that found themselves with a pretty good opportunity at Saratoga. And the racing office certainly did help with that quite a bit. I mean, I would imagine the best performance, there were a lot of really good performances. I thought McKinsey's Whitney was outstanding. I think I'm kind of a McKinsey fanboy, I guess, which is odd because I usually don't really fall for any Bob Baffert horses. I thought he was very, very good. I thought Code of Honor was great in the Travers. But you had individual efforts that you had to admire. Imperial Hints Vanderbilt, Chancelot's Amsterdam. You know, these were races that were going to turn your head. You know, the workmanlike win for Preservationist in the Woodward, that was certainly something that you had to like for a variety of reasons, one of which is that it's really easy to root for Jimmy Jerkins, and now him having a really top-flight handicap horse is definitely a good thing. So it's obviously, as always, sad to see it go, but I think some real improvements were made to the schedule. And I thought the product was outstanding, so I guess now we're just counting down, like, what, 318 days or so till it starts again?
Give or take. What two-year-old? I mean, obviously we know the big names, but what two-year-olds were you impressed with that may not have been as obvious to everybody?
The two-year-old that I absolutely can't wait to run back is Mrs. Danvers. I think Mrs. Danvers is, that's Shug's two-year-old filly that won early on in the Empire 6 sequence the first time it paid out. She had been an unlucky third in her debut and came back and you know, got sort of the Joel Rosario picture frame ride where he didn't even ask her until about the 3/16 pole, and she just blew by everybody, and I get the feeling that the Steve Asmussen trainee who was second in that race is actually pretty decent. So I'm very much looking forward to Mrs. Danvers running back. I think for that matter, Alondra, Shug's other, his debut winner on Sunday, is another one I think that we can all be pretty excited about running back. But she's probably the one I'm looking forward to most. The Colts I thought were, you know, by no means do I think the hopeful was a bad race. I think that you'll have to take it for. I thought Basin ran great, and we'll see what happens with Greenlight Go. I still think Greenlight Go is a very, very talented horse. So we'll see a little bit more about them at Belmont. One of the great things about Belmont Fall is that you get some of the mile races sprinkled in, and so we'll see some of the maybe also rans from Saratoga get back going. But, yeah, Alondra, and I'll tell you this much. The two-year-old fillies that ran in the graded stakes races at Saratoga, to me, don't look like they're going to be threats in any of the big grade ones leading into the Breeders' Cup. I was sort of seduced by Frank's Rockette's poor trip in the Adirondack, and with due respect to both she and Perfect Alibi and their connections, that was a very, very weak running of the Spinaway. So I don't really have much interest in them moving forward. I think that those are horses that were probably a little ahead of the curve. Everybody will catch up with them in due time. I will say, as far as the final day went, how about Gouverneur Morris? We'll see how he runs on a dry track. I thought he looked outstanding, and we talked about that Monday morning, based on his sale workout and the way he ran, I think that he'll benefit from a little bit more ground down the line, and I think Pletcher would certainly benefit from that too. So, yeah, those are I guess, the ones that stick out most. Three Technique is another one, I guess, that I would want to be waiting for. So, all in all, there are a solid half dozen to ten that, I'm really looking forward to seeing them back and seeing how they improve off of that, and whether it was just a Saratoga thing or they're here to stay.
Well, Belmont starts this afternoon, 3 o'clock. You got the late post. And actually, I'm looking forward to the weekday 3 o'clock start. It should
give you time to go to the beach beforehand.
Well, the beach here in Greenwich, there is a little beach that we have on the back.
Just like Delmar, right? I mean, the 2 o'clock starts, the 4 o'clock starts for the 2 o'clock starts for the beach. So, no, it actually will work out fine.
That makes me think of the late start they used to have at Monmouth, and that was so that Amory Haskell could go play golf, and then get to the track for lunch. That was, I think, they were 2 o'clock start at Monmouth for many years for that reason. So I think he probably had 9 o'clock. There were 9:30 tee time. Let's tee it up and talk about tomorrow. We've got the third leg of this turf troikas that were created that have really been. I hesitate to call them a disappointment, but they certainly haven't generated a big hubbub and a buzz.
You were very diplomatically handled. That was well done. I mean, I would use different words, but hey, you know what? $1 million doesn't get you what it used to. That's just all that I'll say. But it was probably a good idea in principle. But it's not. These are difficult things to get started. That being said, we're still going to bet on them. They're still interesting enough from that perspective. I guess in terms of these stakes, we could start with the most pretentiously named race I've ever seen: the Grand Prix American Jockey Club Invitational. I mean, I can think of a few owners of partnerships that I would see handing out the trophy for a race like this, but I don't know if they will. So in the Grand Prix American Jockey Club Invitational, I like Realm, who I think hardly embarrassed himself in the Suburban. I thought he kind of had the worst of it in terms of running against the grain of the track, two back in the Brooklyn. And I guess, much to my surprise and probably to an extent to Barclay Tag's surprise, he's just a long-distance horse. I don't know if you'd think a Haynesfield out of a Chiefs Crown mare who is mainly effective sprinting would be a long-distance type, but Realm's kind of a long-winded one-run guy. I think with Junior getting back on board, he can settle and make one run. I actually think his stablemate, Highland Sky, deserves some consideration, though I do believe that he was moved up quite a bit last time by the condition of the track. And I think you have to use Rocketry. I don't really see any big reason to go against him. He's been most effective at these kind of distances. He didn't have the best of it in the Brooklyn either, being that he wasn't anywhere near the inside. That being said, Marconi was. And so I think you want to take a slightly more critical approach of Marconi. And if Roaming Union keeps him from getting to the lead, I think that'll be enough to set up horses like Realm and Rocketry. The Jockey Club Oaks Invitational, thankfully, was saved by some overseas participants because the domestic contingent is pretty brutal, all things considered. And I would guess of the horses shipping in, I'm most inclined to take Wonderman just because of company lines. And Nicholas Clement, of course, being the brother of Christophe Clement, has done this effectively. It's been a little bit longer, but this filly gets Lasix. And again, she looks a little bit like the type of Euro that is probably going to benefit from the whole kit and caboodle, right? Firm ground, Lasix, and maybe American style racing. So it would stand to reason that she maybe has a little forward move in her. In terms of the other horses that I think look somewhat dangerous, Edisa on the inside for Alain DeRoyer Dupree. He's been very, very good in terms of picking out which horses to ship over here over time. And she's drawn very favorably on the inside. She's another horse with company lines that look very, 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 make her very tough. She'll be a shorter price, of course, than Wonderman. So they look like the main two to me. If you are inclined to take a horse maybe from over here, Romantic Pursuit looks like the controlling speed, and maybe it could be a situation where she just puts everybody on the chase. I don't know if maybe she's going to be quite good enough when some of these Euro fillies start running at her, but you'll at least get a little bit of a price there, and we saw her very gamely win that mile and three-eighths race last time out at Saratoga. I'm still not sure why, but I will admit there were a lot of results like that I ran into over the course of the meet.
I want to mention that fifth race, the small field maiden special group. I think everybody's going to want to tune in 3:09 post time for the fifth, going 6.5 furlongs. Chad Brown unveils the Farish bred democratic values for Seth Klarman, and this colt by Honor Code maybe very, very talented.
Yeah, it looks like it. It feels kind of funny that this is a horse that's not going to be running in Farish's silks. And the 475,000, I guess the reminder to everybody there is this is still a first crop of Honor Code, so it's tough for them to go for a heck of a lot more than that. I would imagine this is going to be a pretty nice-looking horse, would seem to be training well. I feel like we saw over the course of the meet, looking at the workout reports on a daily basis, you saw his name pop up a couple of times with horses, given that Chad generally trains in company, and I think they came up with it looked each time like this horse was working pretty well. So it'll be interesting to see. Todd Pletcher has a very well-bred son of Liam's Map on the outside as well, out of Giant Sensation, who was a good horse in her own right. And so it'll probably boil down to those two. I guess from a betting perspective, you're going to try and get that far in the pick five and then probably rely on those. The horses with experience, I mean, Hemlock will probably run better, but he was kind of the... He was a disappointing horse in his debut, given the expectation, and now he draws the inside. I don't know if he's necessarily going to have the necessary amount of gate speed to be effective. We'll see. I think you probably want to include him at least as a backup, if not one of the main horses. The only thing I'll say about Democratic Values that you may run into is that when push comes to shove, this is a very distance-oriented pedigree. I mean, Run Up the Colors is the second dam, who, of course, was a dam of Revolutionary, and Freedom Flag dropped one full Memorial Drive, who was a winner at two, who did win sprinting. But again, you're talking about Honor Code, who was better at a mile or more, and Run Up the Colors being the second dam, who's better at a little bit longer distance as well. So it could take a little bit of time, but you know, these are the kind of horses that you're excited to see. And by no means, I think we talk about this pretty much every year, but by no means are the good two-year-old races over. In fact, in a lot of cases, the best two-year-old races are still to come, because you'll get some excellent Belmont September and October two-year-old races, and then a ton of very, very good ones at Aqueduct. So we're a long way from the end of it, and this looks like a pretty big opportunity too. I guess before we sign off, I should discuss the Jockey Club Derby.
Yeah.
In what perhaps might be the only running of it. So it could be worthy of, or at least for $1 million. This is a race where I guess you have the winners of the first two of this turf triple, whatever the clever name for it is, Henley's Joy and A Thread of Blue. And they're joined by some overseas participants, the greatest of which, of course, looks like Spanish Mission. And Spanish Mission, owned by Team Valor and Earl Mack, obviously American-based connections. It looks like a horse that it really excels at a mile and a half, if not more. The Lasik should probably give him no harm. He is a horse that looks to have a little bit of trouble getting out of the gate. That probably won't be a big issue going the mile and a half at Belmont with the big sweeping turns on the widener. So he's the horse to beat. I mean, there's really no doubt about that. Digital Age is the morning line favorite, but I don't think there's a chance that he'll go off favorite over Spanish Mission, not with the running lines that he has. Digital Age took a nice step forward in the Saratoga Derby, running second, beating a length. I think he'll probably like the mile and a half. I don't think he'll have a huge issue with it. And I think certainly Loom's one of the major players. And my sort of off-the-wall horse to get in there is Kadar, who probably is a horse that wants to go long. Mike Maker's horses usually get better the farther you send them. And he had no setup and no trip last time in that Saratoga Derby. So he might be able to get a slice of it at a big, big number.
Nice. The three stakes tomorrow, and with each passing weekend, more and more good stake action coming at Belmont. It's not the same as it used to be, the fall championship meet, but it is still pretty darn good. And I think as it gets closer, people are going to get excited about looking forward to the Champagne in particular.
Yeah, I mean, you. I'm somebody, of course, who will occasionally make an off-color joke, and don't get me wrong, I love the Breeders' Cup. I love the people I know who work for the Breeders' Cup. I love the Breeders' Cup betting challenge. I think it's all a lot of fun, but I did laugh. I had a nice laugh at Jimmy Durkins' quote about the Breeders' Cup when he was asked about preservationist going, at least where he was going to be pointed. He said, like my father said, sure was a nice world before the Breeders' Cup came around. Ain't that the truth? And I say that in the context of the conversation we're having, which is that the Breeders' Cup obviously changed the Belmont Fall Championship meet. And, you know, I long for the days in the mid to late 90s where everybody lined up on a Saturday late in September, early in October, and ran in a prep race. And, you know, some of those cards were just epic. I mean, really going back not even that far, the card that Curlin won the Jockey Club Gold Cup on, that was a day that Smart Strike sired the winners of the Vosburgh, the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic, and the Jockey Club Gold Cup. At 6 furlongs on the dirt, 10 furlongs on the dirt, and 12 furlongs on the turf, that was when every race was run on the same day. Now, of course, it's spread over time because horses can't run more frequently than every 45 to 60 days, and, you know, it's just not quite what it was. Unfortunately, I feel like the new Super Saturday is Travers Day, and I don't want that to be the case. I want good horses to run as much as possible, especially before they point to that ultimate end-of-year objective. So, like I said, nothing disparaging against the Breeders' Cup. I did think that was a clever remark and feel as if there has been an impact, of course, on the Belmont Fall Championship meet that I think we loved back in the day.
Well, and the reality, there's a couple of different sets of connections and horses that are not necessarily, guaranteed to go. Shug and Mr. Farish weren't exactly, jumping and speculating about getting out to California to run in the Breeders' Cup with Code of Honor. They said, we'll do what we do next, and then we'll see. They were not... They were not overly committed to going out either. So they're very interesting. And, Jimmy also made the case with us on Sunday on TV with Seth and I about, just Churchill or, the day that ultimately will come when the Breeders' Cup comes back to New York, that, it would be nice instead of everybody having to, to pack up and go westward more times than not. That basically it's 2 out of 3 right now are being run, and there's another one scheduled at Del Mar, and it's not exactly fair to have the country tilted in that direction, make everybody go out there. But until we do something at Belmont, until there's a commitment or a situation where Naira feels that they want to bid on a Breeders' Cup or negotiate, bringing it back to New York. What else is there? I mean, there's really, it doesn't seem like Woodbine is going to get one again. That's East Coast-ish. I don't think they'll ever go back to Monmouth, even though that was very unfair. It was just circumstantial the way the rain came. But, you got to pack your bags every time for a cup.
No, it's unfortunate. And we're in a four-year stretch where it's only one was run outside of California between 16 and 19. So, yeah. You know, I think that certainly weighs on the horsemen. And, you know, I would obviously love to see it run at Belmont again. I think Belmont's a great, great host site. And if we can somehow find a way to turn, I don't know, 10,000 seats into something premium so that people with funny hats and jackets can come to it and pay a lot of money for seats, then it'll be good to go. So I think the weather excuses and things like that are a little silly. I think it was an event that was made to be run at a variety of different tracks, and I don't blame anybody for not going out there. It's not something that I think is something they should feel obligated to do. And you would have to think that for somebody like the people like the Farishes and Shug McGahee, with a horse like Code of Honor, that 2020 Breeders' Cup Classic at Keeneland is really the goal. Yeah, he's in your backyard at a track that he's trained over, that they're all very, very comfortable with. And, you know, this three-year-old crop could really be anything in terms of being four-year-olds. The older horses right now are a very, very scattered bunch. So that's really, I think, what you're looking at long range. And I think that pointing to something like that is obviously the best move with a horse like Code of Honor, who probably needs a little bit more time. I do mock sometimes people taking a lot of time between races. He looks like a little bit of a slight horse that runs better with time between races. So we'll see him get better, I think, as a four-year-old, and I'm sure that's where he'll end up. And I don't blame them, to be perfectly honest. We've also seen this with them before. I mean, 16 years ago, Will Farish did not take what was clearly the best horse in training to the Breeders' Cup Classic. So it's not unheard of for him to skip the Breeders' Cup with this particular horse, and he certainly doesn't deserve any flack for doing so.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, always a treat. And Nick, good luck this weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks, my friend. I'll talk to you next week.
Nick Tamaro, let's take a break, and we'll come back and go down to Virginia. Jill Byrne going to join us, and I suppose that's another question. I'm just thinking about the storm working its way up the coast and what it might mean for New Kent. So as we bring in Jill to talk about Colonial's terrific return to racing, we'll see about the weather as we wait. Back after this, Jill Byrne.